There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, and there you have it.
There you go.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 985, March 27th, 2023. Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say the Red Bull stampede in Saudi and machismo podium is talk of town around the globe. And we will look at those on slippery slope. We shall explain, gladly. Back to you, El Jefe.
Thank you, Nasser. On tonight's program, the host, yes indeed, has attended the Good Guys 39th Grundy Insurance All-American get-together in Pleasanton, California. And it was awesome. Of course, I brought the F1 Weekly official photographer, Mr. Dan Gentile. And with him, we're going to have a great spread on the front page. We're talking classic American California car show. It's a great one. The Good Guys always put on a fantastic event. And I'm really glad that they keep inviting me and the F1 Weekly staff for fun and adventure. Now, let's get to the real news. Force India Motorhome, found in Germany with Adrian Sutil's piano still inside. Kimi does good, but not so much. Nike says no to Max, and you know what that could mean. And what is all this talk about LCH leaving Mercedes? Come on, man! And this week's special interview, and this is a big one for me, this goes back to the pre-Fernando era when I was enamored with a young Canadian. And this gentleman, everybody knows, the 1997 Formula One world champion, the dude, Jacques Villeneuve. Awesome interview. Thank you, Nasser, for doing a fantastic job on that. And I just want to remind all our listeners that we need your contributions to keep this program on the air. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know, you'll want to. NAS, we got a great race coming up. Finally, we could move on from the full-blown domination and Max having a lot of issues. But yes, are you prepared?
Yes, sir. I am really looking forward to the action in Albert Park. And I hope some of our familiar members are going to the race. And we would like to get some photographs, so which will be fantastic. And we thank them in advance. And the track is pretty nice. I do. There is a certain part of the track, you know, after the start, they go through some trees and all that. I like that area section of the track very much. And of course, it's jam-packed. The locals are enthusiastic. Locals are well-informed. And so this is all a very good atmosphere. And it, you know, should really go back to the season opener instead of opening a race in the desert where there are no locals to be seen. Anyway, so, talking about the fallout or the hoopla after the race, you saw the photo of Jos the Boss being total PO as Checo was celebrating with his team, and that was all over the racing website. All sorts of people were having, you know, comments, and Jos is even quoted as saying, "It's once in a while Perez gets an opportunity to win the race." That may be true, and it's, you know, it's a fact that Jos's kid Max is not a once in a lifetime, but this is once in a century talent. So if he's losing one race, I say even if Sergio Perez wins 5 races this year, Max will still win at least 15. So when you have an overflow of talent, there is no need to be pissed off. This is not meltdown at nuclear reactor. This is not a Chernobyl situation that everybody's life is in danger. So I think Yoss needs to put down his hiney and grab a Bud, a good quality American product, and let it go, Louis. And you know, the attitude of both Mr. and Mrs. V has not been very classy lately. Last year when Checo won in Monte Carlo, Max's mother made a comment about Sergio Perez and how he spent the night, which I will not get into. And it is reported that Max himself missed the team debrief after the race. I am sure the Orange Army will defend this by saying, well, Senna went to his hotel room after crashing in Monte Carlo 1988, which is very true, and Kimi went on his yard, so which is also very true, after his car broke down. So all is fair in love and war. Now, Mr. Rogers, Monsieur Rogers, you are a man of class, culture, and quiche Lorraine. What are your humble thoughts on this issue?
Well, that picture really does say a thousand words. I mean, to be so stoic and almost, you could see Joss's face. See, I mean, you could see he's infuriated, and he's his face is like this in a sea of happiness and glee. And it makes him stand out and look a little bit bizarre, because even when another group of people is happy and gay, most people in the vicinity get flooded with that wonderfulness and become giddy themselves, except for the mighty Jos Verstappen. Listen, folks, these people are, there's not a lot of kissing and hugging and talking about diversity in their world. And it's not going to change. And maybe that's how he wins. And not only that, I mean, Jos is living vicariously through his son. I mean, he cannot help it. His son has attained what Josh barely could dream about. So it's bizarre. It's very disappointing. It's classless. But, you know, I don't even want to become insulting, because I'm a really nice guy with good upbringing. So I'm just going to say maybe it's cultural.
Yeah, and you know, it's not like this guy is going to have a hard time winning a race again. You know, I remember when Gerhard Berger won his first race in Mexico, 1986, Keke Rosberg was on the podium, and he said to him, enjoy as much as you can. These days will not come, you know, too often. But for Max, this is business as usual. You know, he's going to win a lot of races and a lot of championships. And so it's very, I am sitting only as a race fan. It's very disappointing, this kind of behavior. But, you know, sun is coming up next day, and pretty soon we'll have another race in land down under.
But the best part is on that podium, you know, where he was all frowny because he's in second place. We had the ray of sunshine, Fernando El Macho. So luckily there's balance.
See, you jumped the gun on me. I was going to talk about Machismo as man of the season, and there is a good reason. After making one bad decision after another in terms of team selection, looks like he is now in good hands with a lot of green around him, thanks to Lawrence of Canada. They say it takes two to tango, and if the Red Bull drivers do that to each other, then we will see Senor Fernando Alonso on top step of the podium. And I'm really looking forward to this opportunity in 2023. It's going to be good for him. It's going to be good for your health. You're going to be 20 years younger instantly. And it's going to be fantastic for Formula One. So let's hope it happens. And have you been stocking up on Corona and Tecate in your cellar? You know what they say, be careful what you wish for. Just might come true.
It's very true. I mean, I do have to watch out for the ticker. You know, I'm not a young man anymore, Nasser. But no, with the infighting at Red Bull, this is what we call the perfect storm for El Machismo. I mean, could you imagine the roar of the crowd? The world. This could end wars. I mean, I'm sorry, but I've become emotional about Fernando's first win since the old days.
Well, the good thing is Mexico and Netherlands are not neighboring countries. Remember back in 1970s, early 70s, war broke out between, I think it was El Salvador and Honduras over a football game. Remember that?
My favorite.
Yeah, so we'll see. Okay, sir, now moving on. Key unlocked at McLaren for faster performance, or so they think. James Key has been sacked by Mr. Brown. He came to McLaren from AlphaTauri, and the papaya cars he has designed have not been juicy and delicious in delivering race-winning performance, apart from Honey Badger's one-hit wonder in Parco Monza some years ago. James will be replaced by David, or some say the name is David Sanchez, because Hombre is, has a Spanish name, but he is a French national. He has been released from his duties at Ferrari, but with an extended gardening leave that will see him arrive in Mr. Brown's backyard in 2024, which basically tells me that McLaren is going to be like...
Das Schlachtschiff Bismarck wurde seinen Elementen von der Enkelin des Eisernen Kanzlers übergeben.
SS Bismarck, sailing without any direction for the rest of the season. I hope I'm wrong, because, you know, we want all these teams to do well. Do you see any pulse in that car? They are two very talented drivers, but do you see any pulse in the machinery?
No, I think it's dead in the water. And I also heard rumors that Gordon Lightfoot's son is going to be writing the theme of this particular McLaren.
In the wreck of the Edmund Fitzgerald.
Gracias.
The legend of MCL going down Thames without a trace.
Bravo.
So sad. So sad. Next, sir. Piquet paying the price. Nelson Piquet Sr. has been ordered to pay $950,000 for making racist and homophobic comments against Lewis Hamilton in an interview in 2021. The compensation was awarded by Judge Pedro Matos de Arruda after the charges were brought by Brazil's National LGBT Plus Alliance, along with three other human rights groups, who wanted Piquet to pay $10 million. Moral of the story, don't forget, loose lips sink ships. But I have to say this, Mr. Rogers, anybody who knows anything about Nelson Piquet would know that he has been pushing the envelope for a long time, making comments about Senna's lifestyle and Mansell's wife. Time has come for Piquet to pay the piper, get a large manila envelope, and start stuffing with moolah. You have any comments on this issue, sir?
I thought it was hilarious, but he had it coming. I mean, he is sort of a loudmouth. So there you have it. What they say? I think Fernando calls it karma.
Yes, and you know the worst thing I heard Piquet say or do, and this was absolutely, you cannot even use the word class with what he did. I mean, it was way beyond low class and below class. He was on some talk show, and I don't know if it was in English, but most probably somewhere in South America, I think. And they're just talking and having a good time, and then the person there, host, said, come on, Piquet, let's find out the truth. Who was a better driver, Piquet or Senna? And Piquet motions to his body and says, I'm still alive. And that really hurt me. That really hurt me. It still does. Because that is, you know, to say something like that about a deceased person, especially somebody who brought so much success to your nation. And he was a very nice guy, for all I know, and all the thing he did for the poor people of his nation. That was bad. Very bad.
No class. He's just a classless individual.
Yeah, you know, his son, I saw Ned Senior Piquet Jr. at Miami Homestead. They're involved in a karting project. Actually, they even own a karting track somewhere in Florida. And I met his youngest son, Pedro Piquet. And I had interviewed him at the Po Grand Prix some years ago. And he's very nice, and I had a nice chat with him. And I asked him, man, if I go to you know, your country, can you set up an interview with your dad? And he says, you know, because of what happened, he does not want to talk to the journalist now. Like it was the fault of the journalist.
Not unexpected.
Okay, sir, now we come to more in the USA. Thanks to F1 Weekly familiar member, Stefan in Sweden, who puts out this Formula1Newsletter.com, I came across an interesting story and hope this comes to fruition. A $2.7 billion development proposal for the Atlantic City Airport, Bader Field, which I believe is no longer used, has been approved. The proposal is to transform the former airport into a Formula One racetrack with condominiums and retail businesses. And this has been given the green light by the city council, which in itself is quite an achievement. And so we can have, you know, we can have a round of American casino Grand Prix, Vegas, Atlantic City. Maybe they can do one in the American, you know, reservation. Or what do they call casinos on the reservation? You know, they have a few in California and other places. So we can have a, like a six-round American F1 championship.
We could have Geronimo Grand Prix.
There you go.
Thank you.
Oh, wow, that's a great idea. And then maybe I can get a media pass by default.
Maybe, but I would wait for the custard Grand Prix.
Oh, boy. Are we going to have a big horn GP also?
Exactly.
Thank you. Okay, sir, speaking of F1 Weekly Familia, I would like to give a shout-out to our friend Louis Janssen in Netherlands. He sent me a link to the newly released, I believe it is, movie about Didier Pironi and Gilles Villeneuve. I watched it. I really enjoyed it because, you know, it's from the late 70s, early 80s, an era very dear to me. Have you had a chance to watch this?
I have not had a chance, and unfortunately, unlike you, I have no friends that send me links.
And it's available on YouTube, and it's nicely done, a lot of interviews, this and that. And of course, it's a very emotional topic, so I don't want to comment on who was right, who was wrong. But it's nice to see all the big players, you know, Forghieri, Marco Piccinini, the drivers and their wives and ex-wives and children. I love that kind of stuff. So if anybody has not seen it, I will highly recommend. And thank you, Mr. Louis. Okay, sir, speaking of Gilles Villeneuve, shall we use this opportunity to play the interview with this bambino, Monsieur Jacques Villeneuve?
Absolutely, Nasser. So, yes, keep up the good work, Nass.
Yeah, and thank you. And, you know, like you said, he was world champion, of course, IndyCar champion, Indy 500. And one thing I would like to add, you know, I have met him a few times at Formula One races, and he was always very, very approachable, easy to deal with, and he has always been very polite. So here, this interview, I reached out to his team, which is owned by Chowski, Dr. Colin Collis in Germany, and they said to reach out, call this number. So I called this number thinking it's like the PR lady. And this lady responded, I'm Jack's wife. So she helped arrange this interview. And so my thanks to Julia Villeneuve and Jacques Villeneuve. And hopefully our listeners will enjoy this brief chat.
And here's Jacques Villeneuve.
Hey, man, how
Here
are you?
Are. Sorry about that.
You know, we met a few times before.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I've been trying to get a chat with you.
Very good.
So thank you so much for your time. I know you're short on time. First question, Grand Prix debut from pole position, victory in Indy 500, Formula One World Championship. Was this all on the radar when you were racing Alfa Romeo in Italian Tin Top Series? And I've been following your career since then.
Yeah, well, the Tin Top thing was just a few races like this, and that was not fun. No, I had no idea because I didn't, you know, the path, normal path is Formula 3, 3000, Formula 1. But then I went to Japan instead, and I thought, okay, maybe F1 won't happen, but I'm having a racing career and I'm a professional driver. And after that, it was just a question of opportunities, being at the right place at the right time to jump in IndyCar and from there to F1. But it wasn't the path that was designed, no.
Now, when you were in Japan, you ran into your ski instructor from Switzerland, Mr. Craig Pollock. How important was he in developing and helping your career?
He was because there was a big trust at that point. So we just worked in the same direction. And that was very, very important all the way to building BAR.
Okay, we are here at Sebring and you are now racing sports cars. Is the desire and motivation to succeed still the same as it was when you were in your 20s?
Probably more, because now I understand better the meaning of me, of winning, of the career, of what this sports represents.
That's good to hear. Now, in the press conference today, Dr. Collis said his goal is to beat the factory teams. How long will it take to get there?
It won't be this weekend. We still have a lot to do on the car. This is our first real test session as a team. My first laps, so I really need to get into the rhythm. So we still have a lot to do.
You know, some weeks ago there was a report in racing media that there was some issue with name Van Wall. Has that been all sorted out?
I don't know. I'm not involved in that. So the fact that we're here means that it seems to be okay.
Okay, cool. Sharing a race car with other drivers, how does that affect your mindset and style of driving when you are at the wheel?
It depends on the driver. So far, it seems that our driving is quite similar, so it works out. Sometimes you have a driver that you just don't drive the same way, and then it becomes complicated. But so far, so good.
You know, I've been following Formula One since 1973, night and day, and I'm telling you honestly, I've said this on the podcast many times, I have never seen a driver so cool and calm, especially under pressure, and this goes back to the year of your championship. Were you always like that?
Well, I guess I keep the stress inside, and I use the people around me so they can get the stress, and they're the ones who end up being destroyed at the end of the weekend. But somehow, the more pressure there's been, the better I've been, I have been in the car, so which is a good thing for the big series.
No, absolutely. Now, when you started your racing career, what was your mom's reaction? Was she supportive?
Yes, because independently of racing, I was doing crazy things. I was a skier before car racing, so it didn't make a difference, and she knew that there was no choice, so it was much better to be supportive.
Okay, that's good. Okay, like you, your dad also made a dramatic Grand Prix debut at Silverstone, which I remember very well, out qualifying the team's regular number two driver. What memories you cherish most about going to races with him as a kid?
I don't have many memories. He wasn't very present during the F1 years, so the memories are just like being in a helicopter or being on a snowmobile or stuff like that. So they're very, very small, but it's mainly linked to racing.
Some years ago,
I was at Dijon, so it's those memories mainly.
Well, speaking of Dijon, have you shown that clip to your kids?
Of course, I've shown clips and to my kids, and also of my dad, of me, of my accidents as well. It's part of racing, but they don't understand. They're starting to understand now what racing has meant to our family.
We talk about that Dijon Prenois 79 all the time on a podcast, and some years ago I ran into René Arnoux at Le Mans, and I said to him, hey, Mr. Dijon Prenois 79, and he goes, best race in the world. So he was very complimentary of your dad. Have you stayed in touch with some of your dad's rivals?
No, because you know, they were my dad's friends, and after he passed, they didn't stay in touch with the family. For a while with Patrick Tambay, because he helped us. He organized that we went to school to Switzerland. He was very helpful, but that's about it.
Okay. Your Indy 500 win came despite being a lap down at one stage.
Two laps.
Oh, excuse me, more. How important is that win compared to your Grand Prix wins?
Well, that win is super, super important because of the way it happened, and it's that win that opened the door to F1. Without that win, there would not have been F1, probably.
Depth of competition, depth of talent on both sides of the pond, same, or did you feel the difference when you moved into Formula 1?
I don't know, because all through the IndyCar years, I was still progressing, and same thing in F1, the first season to end of the season, there was a big difference in my driving. The depth of driver was quite deep in both categories. It's really hard to remember now, but there were more difference in F1 from team to team, obviously, with the level of technology. So there was a gap there.
A surreal 1996, that famous pass on Michael on the outside, has special meaning for you after being told it cannot be done. Can you talk about this incredible move, please?
Well, I told the team before the race, or like even weeks before, that somehow I would overtake someone on the outside because it looked like an oval corner. And Jock Leer, my engineer, said, okay, tell us on which lap, so we come with a spoon to pick up the pieces. So that was the joke coming. But when Michael ran into traffic, then I saw that was the right moment to go for it. And the best way to overtake Michael was always to surprise him, to not give him a chance to react.
not many people surprised him. Now, he did surprise you at Jerez in 1997. You and your team were prepared for some argy-bargy. Tell us a little bit about that and what went through your mind at the moment of impact.
Well, at first I managed to get next to him, which was a surprise. But then his instinct took over and he hit my car. And I bounced up in the air. I was just hoping that there was no damage on the car, that's all. You know, once I was in the air, I said, okay, he did it. Now is the car in one piece, and the car seemed to be working fine, but I slowed down. I drive very smoothly, because just in case. And we found out after the race that the battery was holding only from the electrical cables.
Now, is it true that Patrick Head is really a knucklehead?
He's a tough character, but he's fun to work with. You just need to understand how tough he is, and then you have to hold your ground, and there was always a lot of respect with Patrick, so it was fun working with him.
Now, some years ago, you started a driving academy to help talented drivers not having names like Stroll and Latifi. Is that still going on?
Yeah, that's still, it's a concourse, it's a competition, and it's based on time, and the winner gets a season in the French Championship of Formula 4. It's there for anyone who wants to give a chance. So it's not just for drivers who don't have a budget. It has nothing to do with that. It's not to help the ones who cannot afford to be in racing. It's to give an area where you get there only with talent, and the best will win. That's it. Whether you've done some karting before or not, whether you've never driven in your life, it gives an opening.
Okay, some years
we're not against money. We're against lack of talent.
Understand. Okay, some years ago I took a trip to Montreal just to visit the Villeneuve Museum, and then a few years ago in Abu Dhabi, you told me a family has nothing to do with it. Can you talk a little bit about that?
No, I don't know. Never had anything to do with the museum, so I don't know. It's been a business for some people, but it's never involved the family.
Okay, as a young driver, you exploded on Formula One. I remember I was in San Diego in total freeze frame when I heard you were starting from pole position. What's your take on Max, the mega talent that he is?
Max is very talented. He's been growing really well, even into the sport. He's been adapting. He's got a great team around him, but he's working well with the team. So he's making the difference now. But then again, there's not many people at his level. I guess you have Alonso right now. Would you see with last race the way he drove, the way he overtook, and at this moment, that's it.
Okay, thanks so much.
Jacques, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. Nasser?
I think it's time for shall we take a Molson break or a Labatt break?
We'll take a Molson break, and when we come back, I'll talk about the Good Guys show, and of course, you're going to have a fantastic Motorsports Mondial. So we'll be back after these brief messages.
Hi, this is Mika Häkkinen, double Formula One world champion. All the best for the readers, F1 Weekly.
Now, Nasser, before you get into the Motorsports Mondial segment, let me quickly go over my Good Guys experience in Pleasanton, California. The Good Guys Spring All-American Get-Together was a great way to kickstart the 2023 car show season in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's a classic over the years, and this particular edition, we had a beautiful display of the lowriders from Los Angeles. It was awesome. They also do a little slalom race on a little track that they put together every year, and it's just hilarious the kind of cars that come out, like a 73 Suburban bone stock, swinging all over the place. It was really, really, really a fun thing to watch. And all the spare parts and vintage parts and signs and swap meet that's there, and the goods and the toy cars. It's amazing. And some of the vendors, and I have to mention one, which was YorkSpeedShop.com. YorkSpeedShop.com. They had a 34 Plymouth there that was just off the charts in terms of not only restoration, but the hot rod level of it, the LS3, the way it was finished. Every little detail was just very, very impressive. I told them that it was definitely Pebble Beach level. And of course, perusing the grassy knoll area where everybody's got either cars for sale, cars on display, and it's just a great event for the family. Great food. It has everything. So I highly recommend it. Everybody attend the Good Guys car shows. They're all across the country, and the one in California is
awesome. And I also want to once again mention my friends over at YorkSpeedShop.com. I mean, if you have a project, these guys will do it. YorkSpeedShop.com and GoodGuys.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And today we're going to start the trip with Dr. Miguel's hometown, Portugalistan, because that's where the season opener took place. Portugal, that is, of course. And Marc Marquez from neighboring Viva España took pole position, pole number 64 for him, which is very impressive. But on lap 3 into the race, while running in 4th, he did a Grace Jones pull up to the bumper on local rider Miguel Olivares. And that really pissed off the local hombres, because Miguel was doing very well. Both were out of the race, and both will be missing the next round. Victory went to Ducati rider Pecco Bagnaia, who also won the sprint race on Saturday. Now, MotoGP has also introduced sprint races. The checkered flag had an F1 flavor as it was waved by Signor Stefano Domenicali. Very interesting. And this is victory number 12 in the life and times of Signor Bagnaia. Maverick Viñales from Spain was second on Aprilia, and Marco Bezzecchi, who is also Italian, he was third on a second Ducati. Your homeboy, Fabio Quartararo, who is good friends with Pierre Gasly, he finished 8th on a Yamaha, which was the highest placed Japanese bike. So the Paisans have turned the tables and derailed the Orient Express, at least for now. Next race is in Argentina, and this year MotoGP will also race in India at the F1 circuit in Delhi, and also in the new hot spot of motorsport activity called Almaty, Kazakhstan. There is a lot of oil in Kazakhstan. I'm surprised Bernie could not get a Formula One race there. And we move to Formula E in the streets of Sao Paulo. Kiwi 1-2 led by Mitch Evans over Nick Cassidy. And sir, you mentioned that Jenson Button and Kimi Raikkonen. Did you watch the whole NASCAR race from Circuit of the Americas?
Okay, now that was a trick question, Nasser. First of all, in my world, there is just no way you watch a whole NASCAR race, because then you might get into some kind of strange trance and become ill or something. I'm not sure. But I watched some of it here and there. And, of course, the triple overtime, you know, that just gives you more fun and adventure. Another excuse for another Pabst Blue Ribbon. So it was hilarious, you know, following Button and Raikkonen. Raikkonen was in the thick of it, very machismo, and for a moment there, he was top 5, but there's just so many restarts. You know what happens when there's a restart in NASCAR? It concludes with another caution. So, what can you do? But Button, you know, you could tell he was struggling. He was like my grandma back there. Couldn't handle it too well. Probably was begging for his mommy to send him a glass of water or something. So, I don't know. That was my perceived thinking. But hilarious, if you want to have a lot of laughs, you put NASCAR and you put COTA. Unfortunately, we didn't have any rain, because then you get double belly laughs. But other than that, yeah, it was absolutely hilarious.
Yeah, I watched a little bit also. And, you know, so many cautions I can handle. And I just hope Formula One does not become like that, you know. Okay, sir, now we come to... also, I went to... on Saturday, I went to Sebring again. There was these Ladder to Indy Series program, you know, the USF 2000 was there, And I interviewed Jay Howard, who's a team owner, used to be a racing driver, had a nice chat, and which we will play in the next few weeks. Then I also spent a lot of time with Miles Rowe. He is the kid that Roger Penske is supporting, and he won both races. And so that's very good. So it's also did an interview with him and also this lady from Colorado. She's now living in SoCal, Lindsay Brewer. So we have a repertoire, you know, her is increasing. We have quite a few things going. I am planning and hoping to do a lot of races this year and do a lot of interviews. That keeps me alive. And I sent a message to Mr. Brazier today. You know, I just realized that the race before British Grand Prix is 1 week apart. But then there are 2 weeks between the British Grand Prix and the next race. And British Grand Prix, I believe, is on the 7th of July. So what I am planning to do is go there for the week after the British Grand Prix. So that is some time. And I already sent an email to Mercedes F1 team, see if Toto Wolff is available for 10 minutes anywhere in Europe. If I can get that slot, that would be a very nice feather in our 1,000 podcast. So we're working behind the scenes. We're professional grade behind the scene, kind of like GM. Right, Mr. Rogers?
Yes. Well, we're also super duty, like Ford. But, you know, I did want to bring up another item about the NASCAR race with the two Formula One world champions involved. And that was your buddy, Gunther Steiner, in the booth, giving us play-by-plays, color. It was awesome. And he did a phenomenal job because his English was outstanding and he got along with everybody.
Well, you know, he was the one, he was in charge of the Red Bull stock NASCAR program some years ago when they had a NASCAR team here. He was the man in charge. So he's very familiar. He has a good taste for hot dogs and cheeseburgers.
Well, as a matter of fact, there's a little hot dog stand in Charlotte that sells the Steiner dog.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Wow.
Gracias.
Interesting. Okay, so now we come to a segment called Slippery Slope, the Seven Deadly Sins. While we have two drivers from Red Bull at the top of the standings after two rounds, there are seven drivers who have not scored any points yet. Let's take a look at these drivers and what are their chances of driving in Formula One after 2023. Some good, some not so good. We shall start with Yuki Tsunoda. Very quick and potty mouth in Formula 3. Very quick and potty mouth in Formula 2. Tradition has pretty much continued in Formula 1. The team has moved him from England to Italy and they do see some improvement in his performance and behavior. But I think he is really proving, for whatever reason, attitude or something else, he is not Formula 1 material. I think his biggest threat to stay in Formula 1 is his fellow compadre Ayumu Iwasa, currently racing and winning in Formula 2. Just like Yuki, Iwasa is backed by Honda and Red Bull. Final analysis. I think Yuki will get chop-chopped by Ginzu Knife by the end of the season, or at the end of the season. What's your take on Yuki?
Yeah, this is his last season. He'll fade away. And that's it. I mean, he just isn't, there is no Fernando in Yuki. And that's what you need. You know, you need a little Fernando and it's not happening. So, but hey, he's having a good time and he loves the pasta and the marinara sauce. It's good for him. He'll have a lot of good stories for his grandchildren.
You know, I don't even think he will survive or do well in IndyCar racing because there's a lot of, you know, cautions and yellow flag and restart. And he's just going to piss off people to no end.
Very true. Very true. He will piss people off. That's why he'll probably wind up racing against Rubinho.
Okay, next we come to the boomerang of Formula One, Mr. Nico Hülkenberg. I think he will settle in and score more points than Kevin Magnussen this year. I do expect him to continue with Haas next season. What's your take on the Hulk?
Very solid. He gives you what you want. Gunther likes him. There's nothing more you need. And he's a good match with Magnussen because Magnussen can be a little erratic and make some strange decisions.
Okay, now we come to Logan Sargeant. The young American from Boca Raton, Florida, has come into Formula One based on good pedigree and performance. World karting champion, fought to the final race with Oscar Piastri for Formula 3 title and a very impressive debut season in Formula 2 last year. Driving for a team owned by compadres from across the pond, I think he will be swimming to success in Formula 1 one fine day. What's your take on Logan?
Well, super mature, good decision-making on the track. I think he's going to be fine. He's quick. We'll see what happens. If Williams can kick it up a notch. It's such a tough world in Formula 1. We'll see how far he goes. The good news is he's not Scott Speed or Luizzi.
With Antonio Luizzi.
My friend.
Well, I tell you, if he can start beating regularly his teammate Albon, that will get a lot of attention. And that's what you really need to do if you want to survive in this piranha pool. Okay, moving on, we go to China. Guan Yu Zhou, the only Chinese driver in Formula One.
Hi, I'm Guan Yu Zhou from China, and you are listening to F1 Weekly.
He has impressed me. He may not be able to establish Ming Dynasty in Grand Prix racing, but I think a decent backing and performance, which is matching and beating Bottas, should see him continue in Formula One. Next on the list, Nyck de Vries. He has been a surprise in the first two races. Let's just hope the Monza performance in the Williams was not flash in the pan after winning Formula 2 and Formula E championships. I am expecting and hoping that he will find his feet in Formula 1 sooner than later. His biggest threat to stay in Formula 1 will be if one of the Red Bull juniors completely dominate Formula 2 this season, or Mr. Liam Lawson, who will be racing in Japan, dominate Super Formula this season, which he really should do. This was the way Red Bull brought Pierre Gasly into the Formula 1 orbit. Next, we come to a guy on whom I'm very high, has been for a few years, Oscar Piastri. He is definitely a keeper for the long haul. In the opening round, he retired early, but in Saudi Arabia, he served some fine Colombian to teammate Lando Norris. And I'm talking about Juan Valdez Coffey here. Both McLaren drivers have tremendous junior Formula pedigree, very successful and impressive, both of them. But I will not be surprised if Piastri rattles the cage of Lando in the second half of the season. And speaking of Lando Norris, the boy from Bristol completely overpowered Daniel Ricciardo last season. There are rumors that he may go to Red Bull or leave McLaren for some other team at the end of the season. The way things are going at McLaren, this will not surprise me. And I really think he should go some other team that is more competitive. In his junior career, the only championship he did not win was Formula 2, in which he finished second to George Russell. So the talent is definitely there. It's just a matter of getting in the right team at the right time. Do you concur, Senor?
Yes, the timing, planets aligning. Not only that, but for me, Lando Norris is the perfect replacement for Lewis Hamilton at Mercedes.
I thought they have a perfect replacement there already.
I know, but another Brit. They love the Brits over there. They already have two. But, you know, Lewis is not young. He's going to have to deal with the situation. I don't know. You know, the problem is Lewis has had that dominating season from 14 to 20. We'll see what happens. But a lot of people keep talking about LCH going to Ferrari. I don't see that happening. I don't think any of this, all these theories are just good food for entertaining the brain. But in reality, only Fernando provides such diversified fun.
But the resources they have at Mercedes, they will turn this ship around sooner or later. It's looking more like later. But they have to provide this guy a car with where he can compete for the championship. And we all know, even if you put Max in this Mercedes, he's not winning races. So it's not just a matter of hitting the delete button and all your talent is gone. What do I do now? And Lewis, I think, is having a cup of tea with Alonso these days. He's telling him, hey, man, you can be 42 and still be machismo. So we'll see how it works out. Okay, sir, now we come to what I call remembering Revson, Peter Revson. Mr. Rogers, were you following Formula One in 1973 and 74?
You bet I was, Nasser.
So you remember Peter Revson?
Of course.
Okay. Well, you know, in March 1974, I was 15 years old, and one day I went to the usual place for my racing fix, the British Consulate Library in Karachi. They always had a fine selection of books on Grand Prix racing and newspapers from Fleet Street. And it was while going through the sports section of Times of London that I saw a photo of Peter Revson with sad news. He was killed at Kyalami in a testing accident. And that accident took place on March 22, 1974. So I thought we should talk a little bit about his racing life. He was from New York, part of the family that started Revlon Cosmetics. He started racing while studying in Hawaii. When he was at Cornell, he met and became friends with Teddy Mayer, who would later go on to own a McLaren team. I think, I've tried to check this, but I think Peter Revson is the only American driver to win a race in Monaco, and that was the 1965 Formula 3 race, which used to be a very prestigious race in those days. His other racing achievements include pole position at Indy 500 and second place finish in 1971. Same year, he also won the Can-Am Championship with McLaren. His day of days came at Silverstone, beating pole man Ronnie Peterson in a JPS Lotus to win his first Formula One race. And here he is talking after that famous victory.
Congratulations, your first ever Grand Prix win. How does it feel?
Oh, it feels great. I've been waiting a long time for this.
I remember you here at Silverstone in 1964. It must seem a long, long time ago.
It sure does. And since then, my ambition was to win a Grand Prix, and I'm glad it could be the British Grand Prix.
How did you feel about this race, restarting after all the shambles at the beginning?
Well, I was pretty happy about it because I got a pretty lousy start the first time around. The second one wasn't too good either. So I got to learn how to jump the flag.
What has happened to the McLarens all of a sudden?
Well, we've had a good car right from the beginning. And, of course, we have good tires on Goodyear. We've got good cars and good engines. And we've had good cars from the beginning. But the design is only 3 months old and it's taken 3 months to get it sorted out.
He also won the very chaotic 1973 Canadian Grand Prix in the rain. It was in this rain that safety car was used for the first time in Formula One. His friend Teddy Mayer told him for 1974 he would be replaced by Emerson Fittipaldi. Revson had a low-paying offer from Enzo Ferrari and decided to follow his own shadow and signed for Don Nichols' team, the UOP shadow. Then came the fiery crash after suspension failure at Kyalami in preparation for the South African Grand Prix. Roger Penske was one of the pallbearers at his funeral. Ironically, his autobiography, Speed with Style, which I have read, and is a very good book with a lot of information about his life, lifestyle, and you know what goes on behind scene. That book went to press in New York City on the same day as his fatal accident. Talk about timing. So that was a little remembrance for Peter Revson. He also won races in Trans Am. And, you know, when he was there, Mark Donohue was there also. And these were very talented drivers. And unfortunately, within 2 years, both of them were gone. Any thoughts and comments on Peter Revson, sir, or anything you remember?
Well, not only Peter Revson, but that era, the mid-70s, when we had some really great new concepts in Formula One. And for me, I was a big Renault fan. But the whole thing was... It was awful. I mean, I remember reading about the accident, but let's not forget I was young at the time and I was busy chasing young cheerleaders.
Oh, that's good. Nice to know that. Okay, sir. Now we come to famous last words. Today they come from Felipe Massa. This is a postscript to our motorsports mantra last week called Murder on the Goat Express. He said, and I quote, "You should never make the mistake of writing Lewis off. Next to Michael Schumacher and Ayrton Senna, he is the best driver who has ever driven in Formula One." End quote. This is quite a machismo statement from a man who was teammate to Michael Schumacher, because when you race with the very best, you know who the very best is. Which brings us to musical Mondial. As we all know, on Hamilton's helmet it says, "I shall rise." So we invite Mr. Herb Alpert to the Palatial Studios for his version of Rise. Thank you for listening, and please enjoy.